Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. It is always a delight to be able to introduce and to have a conversation with one of the brightest men I know, and certainly one of the great experts in our country when it comes to matters involving our economic security. He is Kevin Freeman, a chartered financial analyst who has made a specialty of studying and analyzing and warning about the rising tide of economic warfare globally, much of it aimed at us. Economic War Room is the name of his new television program, and it is very exciting that we have caught up with him on the set where he will be producing that program. Kevin Freeman, thank you so much for joining us, and congratulations on what seems to be a great step forward towards realizing this longstanding vision of yours.
Well, thank you, Frank. It is exciting for us. We're watching all of the pieces come together on the set and installing the monitors and other things today. And this is a long-term dream, and we're just thrilled to be able to realize it.
Well, I am as well, and I look forward to your complimenting your terrific offerings at globaleconomicwarfare.com with much in the way of video production and your considerable gift for storytelling that I think will be a great addition to certainly our portfolio. As a senior fellow of the Center for Security Policy, we take great pride in your work, Kevin. You've also been the author of two best-selling books on these subjects, Secret Weapon and Game Plan. And I saw in your blog the other day that you have found much evidence to support the thesis, particularly of Game Plan, that we are indeed facing a global economic and cyber war. Walk us through some of the highlights of what that looks like as you see it at the moment, Kevin.
Sure, Frank. When we got into the war room and sat down, I'd just written a blog post the day before, and within a 24-hour period, we saw almost a dozen different examples that just documented everything that we said. We've been talking about the winds of war, and literally we're seeing the winds of World War III in so many different areas developing around us, but most Americans just remain oblivious to it.
Yeah, this is particularly true with respect to Russia, and we'll be talking later in the program with George Raceley about the reality that the Russians have long been seeking to harm us, going back, of course, to the Soviet days, most especially, but still under Vladimir Putin as well. Talk, Kevin, a little bit about the evidence of Russians' cyber warfare against the United States, some of its most important assets and institutions.
Well, in 24 hours, Reuters had a report, and most news agencies did, when we found attacks on our electric grid and the people that produce our power a couple of years ago, for the first time, the United States acknowledged that came from Russia. Those were Russian attacks on our energy grid. And it should not be surprising. It's something that the British are acknowledging now. It was in the Sunday papers in London over the weekend. But the reality of it is that Russia has developed an expertise in targeting and taking down power grids. They did it in Ukraine, and they're literally probing all of the networks around the world because they know what you've shared with the American people for several years now, that if you take out the electric grid, you take out the civilization.
And a lot of the people who are part of it, too, as well. They've also apparently targeted our aviation system. In what way, Kevin, and to what effect?
Well, you know, they didn't get into great detail when the U.S. report came out, but our civilian aviation system is integral infrastructure, just like the power grid. If you remember any of those times when there was a computer glitch at United Airlines and it froze traffic around the country and cost us billions of dollars, just imagine if you hacked the aviation grid, you could cause planes to crash, or you could cause planes to not just be able to not take off. And if you did, you'd freeze the nation's economy, and you could do it in very short order. And they have been, you know, we just admitted that they have been probing in our aviation system. So these are all warfare tactics that they're preparing, and you know, we're just blindly going on as if nothing's happening.
Yeah, two thoughts on this, Kevin Freeman. As I understand it, the British government is now warning utilities in the UK that one of the things the Russians may do is attack the power grid in Britain in retaliation for sanctions or other actions the British government may take in the wake of this nerve agent assassination attempt of a man and his daughter in the United Kingdom. That's of concern. And secondly, Kevin, you're based down in Texas, of course. I'm sure very much top of mind for you is this ongoing saga of packages blowing up, many of them in Austin, but most recently one in San Antonio. And the thought occurs, we don't know anything about who's responsible, of course, but this could be a very serious act of economic warfare as a practical matter, if not by design, if it messes up the system on which we all depend so much for prompt package delivery through various means, might it not?
Oh, absolutely. We are a just-in-time society. We depend on packages arriving just in time. We don't keep large inventories. And when you disrupt by terror, fear, and reality that you don't know if you can open a package or not, and you have to spend thousands of dollars to investigate if the package is safe, you could literally destroy an economy. We depend on all of these different infrastructures, shipping being one of them. And that package in San Antonio was apparently bound for Austin. So in the capital of Texas, we've had a terror attacks that could be economic warfare.
Indeed. Anything on the UK threat, Kevin Freeman?
Yeah, it was on all of the in all the British papers. I read the London papers on Sundays in particular, but every day I skim the headlines. They're acknowledging, Frank, nothing different from what you said 3 years ago, but it's very real. And we have to admit that Russia and Putin have the technology, and if they're willing to use a chemical weapon in London and they're willing to do the things that they've done, why not? And in fact, just a few years ago, there was a Russian spy that was caught by the FBI whose job was to find out how to take down our stock market using exchange-traded funds, which would involve hacking.
Kevin, you also note that others are learning from the Russian example, perhaps among them the communist Chinese. There's several issues that you've pointed to on your globaleconomicwarfare.com site involving attacks on firms linked to the South China Sea dispute, for example, and our friend Peter Schweitzer's new book suggesting that the Chinese have used hacks, among other things, to gain information that they could be using for influence operations. He's writing about Lilane Chao, the transportation secretary under President Trump, and her husband, Mitch McConnell, Senate Majority Leader, as among the targets. Talk about that, if you would.
The Chinese have very systematically hacked every system that we have, ranging from the driver's license database of the state to the Office of Personnel Management to Equifax and so forth. And they've assembled an enormous amount of information that would rival Facebook. You know, we have Facebook. What are they doing with all this consumer data information? Well, the Chinese have hacked it, and they have it. And so now they have the ability to find out if a person in power has a relative that wants to do business in China, that they can use that as an influence operation, either subtly or directly. And they've seen money as their weapon for two decades since Unrestricted Warfare was published. So they've recognized the reality that they can offer a business deal which will make you less likely to take a strong stand against China, or they can use it in forms of bribery. And that's what the Schweitzer book is about. It's frightening when you add in the cyber component that they know everything they need to know about us, and they're willing to use these weapons.
It's so good to talk with you, Kevin Freeman. I'm sorry we're out of time, and I'd wanted to ask you about the possibility of a new set of tariffs being imposed on China by Donald Trump, but that will wait for next week. In the meantime, keep up the great work you do, my friend. Look for Economic War Room with Kevin Freeman, and also be sure to visit frequently globaleconomicwarfare.com. Take care, my friend. We'll talk with you next week. Next up, we will speak with Luis Fleischman about the latest in Latin America and what it might mean for you. And more straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. Listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. It's great to have with us, as ever, the man who is the editor of the Americas Report for the Mengus Hemispheric Security Project at the Center for Security Policy. He is our friend, Dr. Luis Fleischman. Dr. Fleischman, in addition to being a prolific contributor to the Americas Report and through other vehicles, is the author of a very important book, Latin America in the Post-Chavez Age, The Security Threat to the United States. He is one of our duty experts on what is going on south of our borders, and it's always a delight to have him. Dr. Fleischman, thank you so much for joining us. Welcome back.
Like always, it's a pleasure to be here with you, Frank.
Thank you. Listen, there's a lot to talk about at the moment, and I want to move through several things with you smartly, Luis. You've written a piece at the Americas Report about something that, frankly, had escaped my attention, and I suspect may have for others as well, and that is the arrest of a Cuban national in Colombia on suspicion that he was plotting on behalf, perhaps, of ISIS to attack the large American diplomatic mission there, our embassy in Bogota. What do we know about this character, and how justified do you think those suspicions are?
Well, I think the suspicions are pretty justified because, first of all, the plan was to attack the Colombian embassy in the United States. Now, the American embassy in Bogota is one of the largest embassies in the world, with the largest amount of officers working there and diplomats. And that obviously has a history, particularly the need to fight against drugs. Another thing that it was found is that the person who was arrested had strong contacts or has maintained contacts with two individuals, one in Spain and another one in Morocco. And apparently it is suspected that these two individuals are connected to radical Islam based on the conversations that were intercepted by the Spanish service, what is called intelligence service, as well as by the FBI. This man is a Cuban citizen that tried to enter Colombia three times, was deported two times, and for some reason he managed to re-enter the country. Again, at this point, we don't know more about him. I know he's being indicted. He's basically being taken care by the judiciary, the Colombian judiciary, the courts. You know, there is a judicial process against him. But on the other hand, what we don't know is how exactly this guy was picked by ISIS and or by any radical organization, we don't know yet. But to keep saying that these people are lone wolves is not really a theory that I accept anymore.
Somebody was saying to me the other day, Luis, that if you're a fan of Star Trek, there's actually something at work there. I think the Borg was responsible for sort of the hive mentality. And I think that's not an inapt way of describing what Sharia supremacism is all about. You know, there may be people who act individually as jihadists, but they're exhibiting, you know, the the behavior they believe is what they're required to engage in by that hive mentality, if you will, their attachment to Sharia and jihad. Hey, Luis, very quickly, I want to hit two other things with you. We'll be following closely this story in Colombia for sure, because, of course, as Judicial Watch, among others, has been pointing out, there's a lot of reason to be concerned about ISIS operating in our hemisphere and perhaps attacking not just our posts overseas, but even here in the United States. But I did want to ask you about Venezuela. We talk about it frequently when you're with us. The Trump administration has apparently decided to tighten the screws on the Maduro regime a bit further by going after something that has been relatively recently introduced, I believe, this new cryptocurrency, the Petro, I think it's been called, supposedly backed by the value of oil in the ground in Venezuela. What can you tell us about those sanctions, and are they having any desired effect?
Yeah. Well, I think, yes, anything that actually, it's not clear to me what kind of effect they may have. Certainly, the Petro, which is the coin that was issued by the Venezuelan government, is a way, in fact, to avoid sanctions. And is in a way is a way to basically move away from the international monetary system. So I believe the fact that the Petro is being sanctioned, I think it is a good measure, and it was initiated by the Treasury, and I think the Treasury is doing a terrific job. The question is whether all this is sufficient. The fact that Mike Pence is coming to speak to the OAS, I think it is an important thing because it shows that the United States cares. The secretary of the OAS told me personally that the American involvement is crucial, and only American sanctions can or may move the Venezuelan government. If you ask me, yes, these sanctions are important. I think it is important that President Trump is not abandoning the issue of Venezuela. But on the other hand, I have to tell you, in my opinion, is insufficient. It needs to be really a full-scale sanctions, including oil sanctions, which I understand some in the administration support that measure, but there has not been a decision yet to go ahead with that.
Well, this is so important, Luis, because as you know, I remember we spoke with Russ Dallin a couple of weeks ago, and he was talking with us about the fact that you're now seeing people fleeing Venezuela in large numbers simply because the economic privation is unsustainable for them and their families. And this is going to destabilize the region and create, I'm afraid, opportunities for much worse to come, both in Venezuela itself and probably in neighboring countries, if not all the way up here. Let me ask you, you mentioned Mike Pence is speaking tomorrow, as it happens, at the Organization of American States. The vice president is expected to forecast what President Trump and the administration hope to accomplish in their upcoming travels to Peru to participate in the Organization of American States summit there in April. What do you anticipate will be top of mind? I presume Venezuela will be one of the topics, but what else, Luis Fleischman?
Well, I have not seen the agenda of Mike Pence. However, I believe that Venezuela is going to be the main issue, the issue of human rights. I know, for instance, that the upcoming summit is going to deal with the issue of corruption, which is extremely important, you know, because it's one of the main sources of instability in Latin America. You know, when you have corruption, that means everyone is for sale, the policemen, members of Congress, everyone. I do not know whether Mike Pence is going to raise that, but the fact that the OAS is raising it in April, and that I think we need to thank Almagro for his leadership on that. I assume that tomorrow Venezuela is going to be the center of everything, and I believe that that visit was arranged also by Almagro because he strongly believes that American sanctions are crucial to move the human rights issue in Venezuela.
Yes, and indeed they are. Luis Fleischman, you've been on this case for a long time and written brilliantly about it. You can find Luis Fleischman's writings, among other places, at The Americas Report, a product of the Center for Security Policy's Mengus Hemispheric Security Program. It's so great to talk with you, Luis. Let's do it again soon. Thank you for your time today. Keep up the good work, my friend. Next up, George Raceley joins us. We'll talk with him about Russian influence operations and the preposterous idea that they only began in connection with Donald Trump. That and much more straight ahead.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. It's so good to have with us George Raceley, a man I admire enormously. He is these days the editor of Conservative HQ, which is a product of Richard Viguerie's great intellectual and organizational efforts over many years. George is, among other things, a veteran of hundreds of political campaigns, including every Republican presidential one from 1976 to 2003. He worked for Governor Sarah Palin in 2008. He was also a policy and communications man in House and Senate staff positions and worked on the staff of Vice President Dan Quayle during the George H.W. administration. He is a certified genius, which is one of the things that we're not going to hold against him, but he is remarkable in many respects, and that is among them. George Raceley, welcome back. It's so good to have you with us, sir.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Frank, for having me.
Well, I wanted to have you for a couple of reasons, George, most of them having to do with things you've been writing about, which I find very illuminating, and I hope people will check them out at Conservative HQ. The first being something that caught my eye as well, and I hope most of us, we suddenly were regaled with a whole slew of stories over the past, 17 months or so, I guess now, about Russian influence operations. And yet, George, as you observed recently, it seems as though most of the people who are caviling about them seem to think that they were unique to the period in which Donald Trump was running for president and now in office. Diana West, a colleague of ours, the author of American Betrayal, a regular guest on this program, has made clear that's not so. And yet it seems to be being studiously ignored by others. Talk about that, if you would.
Yeah, the thing that kind of caused me to put pen to paper most recently on the topic was the Washington Post dismissing Diana's book, American Betrayal, which I consider to be a must-read book for everyone interested in national security, dismissing it as a myth and saying, you know, the short version, well, spies gather information, they don't try to affect policy, which of course is completely ridiculous and ahistorical. I have to do is read American Betrayal to see the record documented of the penetration of the Roosevelt and Truman administrations
and subversion and influence operations at every level of government with Diana argues, profound effect historically.
Well, and not just government, but also, you know, other cultural institutions as well have been penetrated.
Right. So the question occurs, George, why would people be conjuring up this image that this is an anomaly involving Donald Trump?
Well, they don't want to admit that the left has been part and parcel of this for 80 years or more.
By this, you mean the penetration and subversion?
Yes, absolutely, the penetration and subversion. And that it started, or it reached, so shall we say, critical mass during a period of Democratic hegemony in American politics.
Particularly during the FDR administration, I guess, and into Truman. Let me switch gears with you because this is not simply an oversight, as you say, or even just an effort to sort of deflect attention from a certain reality. This is, it seems, quite a calculated effort on the part of the left in Congress to both vilify and undermine this president, notably, but not exclusively, with these charges as yet unsubstantiated of collusion with the Russians. One of the principal beneficiaries of all this, she hopes, is Nancy Pelosi, who would like once again to be returned to the Speaker of the House position she's held off and on now for years. You argue in a conservative HQ piece, George Raceley, that Nancy Pelosi may well be greatly embedded in that ambition by this so-called omnibus bill that the Congress is about to foist on the American people. Tell us what's in that and why you would say that's so.
Well, you know, this is a vehicle for instituting a whole host of policies that the conservative grassroots have, you know, rejected time and again, that they've told Republicans they don't want: gun control, amnesty for illegal aliens, funding of Planned Parenthood, funding of sanctuary cities.
And a whole increase in domestic spending with horrible effects on the budget deficit, right?
Yeah, a vast increase in domestic spending, the great percentage of which is for, you know, sort of war on poverty successor, great society successor programs that have not cured poverty or made society greater.
Right, right. If anything, have simply preserved sort of an inferior class, the underclass, I guess it's called, of people who have little opportunity to get out of it. You mentioned amnesty as a particular concern in all of this, and I think you're absolutely right that this will be enormously demoralizing for the base that elected Donald Trump, and for that matter, created majorities in the House and Senate for Republicans, which will conduce to Nancy Pelosi's ambitions, for sure.
Yeah, when you're a Republican voter out in, you know, real America outside the Beltway, and you get Democratic policies out of a Republican majority, you have to ask yourself, why bother?
Yeah, what's the difference? Yeah, stay home. I fear that's what's coming if we're not careful. Hey, George, speaking of what's coming, you have also written a powerful piece about what you call peace without victory in Afghanistan. And you describe the failure on the part of our government to understand the war aims of our enemies there, the Sharia supremacists, whether they're doing business as the Taliban or Al-Qaeda or something else. Talk about what's at work there, George. How could it possibly be, here some 17 years on since 9/11, we still don't seem to understand who we're up against and what motivates them?
Well, Frank, the thing that frustrates me so much about what's going on over there is that, you know, our military and political leaders seem to think that our enemies are fighting for control of, you know, this godforsaken piece of mountains and rock in the Middle East called Afghanistan, and they're not. What they're fighting for is the worldwide supremacy of Islam and Sharia. And, you know, the talk now is of bringing the Taliban into some kind of coalition government with the American-supported so-called secular government of Afghanistan. And, you know, it's a joke. It's a ruse to get the United States out of Afghanistan and to absolve the generals of their failures without actually accomplishing the goal, which is to defeat Sharia supremacism
in that country at the very least. It seems to me, George, that a further indictment is we're not too clear on what our war aims are there. we're really, this is the worst of both worlds. We haven't come to clear understanding of the enemy, and we certainly don't have a clear idea of what our ambitions are what a peace with victory would look like, it would seem. George, there's so much more to talk about on that and on so many other scores. I hope you will join us again in the near future. You are always a welcome guest here, and your insights on so many of these topics are, dare I say it, brilliant. So, George, thanks for your time, and we'll talk with you again very soon. Next up, we will talk with Justin Miller about the problem of suicide in our military ranks and among our veterans, and an exciting new app that is making a real difference in preventing that. That and more, straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. It is a pleasure to say we are joined by a man who I've not met personally, only just met on the phone, but admired for the work he's doing from afar. His name is Justin Miller. He is a former staff sergeant in the United States Army who deployed twice to Iraq, served in uniform for some 11 years as a rifleman and as a squad leader in the infantry, as well as a military recruiter in his native Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, where I hail from as well. These days, he is a volunteer firefighter with the Dorchester County Fire Department, but most importantly, he is the co-founder and director of Veteran and Military Affairs at a terrific organization, Objective Zero. And we'll be talking with him about what Objective Zero is and the important contribution it's making. But let me first give you a proper welcome. Justin Miller, thank you so much for taking a few minutes to talk about Objective Zero and why it's needed. Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio.
Thank you for having me.
So we need a little background, I think, to all of this. As a veteran yourself and as a man who has cared for and been concerned about your comrades in arms as they've come out of uniform, I know you're very cognizant of a problem, but I don't think most of the rest of us are. Would you talk about the phenomenon of suicide among veterans, how extensive it is, and what may be contributing to this horrible problem?
Currently, we're losing roughly 20 veterans a day and one to two service members a day. I mean, that's roughly 1,600 people so far this year lost, if you think about it. The issue, I think, is that people are afraid to talk about things. It's hard to talk about them. And, you know, until you start talking about them, it's going to be hard. And, you know, the stigmatism of a lot of people feel ashamed of it. I know when I was suicidal, you know, I was embarrassed. I didn't want to put the burden on my family's shoulders. You know, I felt ashamed, you know, because in the military, you're told a lot of times, you know, that only the weak commit suicide, or that you're afraid to ask for help because if you do get help, you know, that's more than likely going to be the end of your career. So a lot of people just have that fear and that shame, embarrassment of bringing it up and saying, look, I need help. I need to talk to somebody.
There's an additional problem, as I understand it, and that is in a lot of cases, even if people are willing to make that very important outreach for help, when they go to the Veterans Administration, they can't get it. Maybe you could talk about your own personal experience, but also characterize what you have found in terms of the responsiveness of that immense bureaucracy to veterans in need.
When I called, I told the lady, I said, you know, I almost killed myself this morning. I said, I'm falling apart. I need some help. I need somebody to talk to. And she came back with, you know, are you thinking about committing suicide right now? And I'm like, well, no. Right now I'm on the phone trying to get help. But I told her, I said, if I have another night like last night, I said, I'm not going to make it. I'm done. I'm checking out. So they actually put me on hold. and came back with an appointment for 2 days later. Now I understand that there's a lot of veterans being taken care of, and depending on which VA you use, it depends on how soon you're going to be able to be seen and whatnot. But at the time, I just felt like I was abandoned. I felt like I was just thrown to the side. I just told you everything that I've been through, just finally was, I was finally breaking, and I told you I couldn't last another night, so what did you do? You gave me 2 nights to call bullcrap, and that's exactly how I felt.
So, Justin Miller, you didn't just seek help, to your credit, and fortunately were able to work through this, but you also set your sights on helping others who may not have made it through those nights waiting for attention from the authorities and the Veterans Administration. Tell us about the genesis of Operation Zero and what it does.
Once I realized that I felt like I was left alone by the VA, I reached out to my buddy Chris Mercado, and we talked for hours. And long story short, he listened, and he set my sights on a new goal. He said, you know, when you joined the Army, he said, you joined because you wanted to volunteer and serve those that you loved. He said, so think of it this way. When you served your country, the government paid for your income. Now that the Army said that you had too many issues, now the VA is picking up the pay. So you're not being paid to serve your country. Now look at it, the VA is paying you to serve your veterans. And that led to us trying to figure out, you know, getting my story written and put out there, and came behind the thought of, you know, the act of listening is what could save a life. And that led into a guy named Ryan Pereira reading my story and said, you know, I have this app idea. And the app originally started off as finding a place to get help. But while doing our research, we found out that when most veterans decide to commit suicide, they usually do it within the first 5 minutes. And that's when it hit us, you know, we don't have time for a veteran to try to find a place to get help, be, you know, put on hold or be put on a voicemail or dropped. We need something that's instant. And that's when we started brainstorming, like, you know, we need something that's a touch of a button.
And so that's what you've created, as I understand it, with Operation Zero, is that you get somebody connected with somebody who will listen to them right away. Is that basically what you've accomplished?
Yes, sir. Objective Zero is allows you, there's a couple ways. One way, we call it the bat signal. It allows a veteran, service member, family member, or caregiver, if they just can't put their thoughts together right now and know they need somebody, they have the option to hit text, talk, or video. What that does is it sends out a signal to all of our ambassadors, and whoever is available first hits accept, and they're connected to that person. All of our ambassadors are volunteers. They're not there for a paycheck. They're trained by the VA. They're trained by Psych Armor. They're trained by Dr. Craig Bryan. We come together as a team to just build, you know, to bridge that gap between civilians and veterans, and to let veterans know that there's somebody out there fighting for them.
So let me just walk through this quickly because we're almost out of time. You've created a means by which, if you are a serviceman, a veteran, a family member, or a caregiver, and you see or feel the need for immediate help, you can go to Operation Zero at the App Store. You can have that on your phone or in your computer, I guess, and you can immediately send out a bat signal that will enable you to get somebody on the line who will help you walk through those 5 minutes, which are the critical window and beyond. Staff Sergeant Justin Miller of United States Army, retired, I can't thank you enough, both for what you did in uniform for our country and what you're doing now, which is at least as important, with Operation Zero. If people want to find out more about it and how they can help support your activities, where should they go, Justin?
You can go to objectivezero.org, or you can download us in the Google or Apple App Store.
Justin, I hope you come back. I'd love to have some time to talk to you about what needs to be done to try to improve the situation in the VA as well, but that's for another day. In the meantime, thank you again for joining us and for what you're doing. Keep up the good work, my friend. I hope the rest of you will come back to us again tomorrow for more Secure Freedom Radio, what you need to know about this war for the free world. Till then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.